Jason Boland, welcome to a quick live from the back room, having a conversation about your going to be playing at the Mark Marley Barbecue in Plainview on Saturday. Thanks for talking with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me. We're looking forward to it. It's that time of year.
You mentioned kind of before we started rolling about, you know, you love as we get into spring, kind of gives way to summer, that idea of playing these festivals and getting out. How is an outdoor concert different from playing a larger venue, kind of like you guys have been playing during the winter months?
Well, the bar crowd, the bar scene are all packed in there, and they have their own kind of energy going or whatever they go out to the bars for. It honestly seems like when the festival season comes around, people are just more geared into whatever that festival is around and the music. So I think it makes people listen a little harder outside. You know, I don't know what it is, but it seems like music outdoors tends to engage the people with the crowd more to me. When you think of it, a lot of times be the opposite. I think in the bars, they feel so crammed in there sometimes that they can feel like they can, still drift in and out, which, you know, it's fine too. It's just like it changes with the seasons.
I know you're playing here in Plainview, and obviously that's going to be a fantastic show, but looks like coming up, and I find this just so impressive, you're playing a festival in Tulsa, and you guys are listed as one of the headliners, but some of the others that are on the list are Better Than Ezra and Sunvolt and The Ventures. Seems like a very diverse concert.
Yeah, that's really cool about those bands, especially for me, Sunvolt, back when mainstream country was first starting to take a little bit more of a turn towards, you know, just whatever people that were into more insurgent and traditional and whatever else you want to call it. And that's what they had to start doing, was calling it different things. So, you know, when before Sunvolt and Wilco became what they were Uncle Tupelo, and they covered the Carter song, No Depression, on an album. And that, you know, that sparked a magazine that tried to define a genre. So we really always looked up to them as being a kind of a roadmap for how to be original.
So I love that idea. And, you know, if you don't mind, I'd love to kind of pursue this for a second, because I've talked with a number of artists. You mentioned you are originally from the from Oklahoma as well. Number of artists who have said that there's almost a slight difference in Texas country and red dirt country as far as the rock sensibilities. I guess you'd say like a Woody Guthrie kind of standing up for what's right kind of mentality. And I'd love to get your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I think if you want to do that, and again, that was just something that when bands like the Great Divide and Cross Canadian Ragweed started playing these Texas country festivals, then everybody was starting to call that wave of music Texas country. Well, then what did you call them? What did you call us? What did you call Stony? You know, and it started to be, you know, well, they would do the double label Texas Red Dirt, which then begs the question, well, what is the difference? Is there a difference? And I really don't think, I think you're splitting hairs. I think maybe in the early days, when you even go back to more of a Robert Earl Keen and Bob Childers and Tom Skinner and Jimmy LaFave and the births of these, Jimmy LaFave being a great example, him being from Stillwater, but then spending a lot of time in Austin. I think if you do define any difference between Red Dirt and Texas, I think Red Dirt tends to have a little bit more of the Tulsa sound, a little bit more Leon Russell in it, just a little more bluesy behind the beat thing. And whereas Texas holds a little bit truer with like the Bob Wills tradition, even though, you know, Tulsa still has its Bob Wills tradition as well. I think when it came to where it shook out to what's the difference between Red Dirt and Texas, and that's, you know, that's still putting, just trying to find a place to put a hat. It's just kind of more Texas swing and a little more tight, and then kind of a little more bluesy. And like you said, maybe a little more folky and a little more beat down everyman thing from the Okies. But, you know, it, at the end of the day, it's really all very much coming from the same place. And it used to be, just being swimming against the mainstream was enough. And now, you know, you still got to watch people hopping in and out of it, but it all comes down to if people like to listen to it, they listen to it, and I hope it does a good thing for them.
So you guys, when you have a show, you always encourage your fans who have been to multiple shows, and you always encourage your fans who have been with you for a long time to show up. I mean, what are you looking for in your first Saturday, for example? What are you hoping for as far as, are you wanting more of a crowd who may not be as familiar with you, or are you wanting more of a crowd who's like, yes, Jason Bolin, I'm going to go drive 500 miles so I can see him?
Well, you know, you always want a mix of both. You want to turn on new fans always, and while you're having a good time with people that understand your stuff already, or, you know, it's a part of their life. And I think we've always approached our set list that way as well. We want to play some new stuff and keep it valid and relevant, and not become a theme park of yourself. You know, just where we go, watch the Pearl Snaps. You know, I think we've done some decent stuff since then. So, you know, like we won't do it in a festival setting like that. But in a lot of the bars right now, we're still playing the entire new album front to back as we start the show, and then playing sing-along after sing-along for the rest of the set. And nobody's been complaining about that, really. And, hey, you know, except for the people that are going to complain. And
right.
What are you going to do? They'll just want to hear some songs that we're not going to play anyway.
They're always going to be those people, I guess. But yeah,
they're going to be like two or three, and they're going to yell out the two or three songs, like out of the 100-song catalog that we won't even consider. You know, that one bootleg of that one, and it's like, man, that wasn't – I didn't learn that song. I learned that song from somebody else, and they learned it from somebody else. And it's not even anybody you know song, and thank you, Napster.
So what – you know, when you have a discography like you guys do, and, you know, you have Pearl Snaps from – I mean – I was in college when that one was out, so that's been over 20 years, 20 couple
yeah,
of years.
Yeah, 2000, you know. January 2000 is when we dropped it. We recorded it in fall of 99.
Wow. And so you've grown, obviously, in that time to where you are now with The Light Saw Me. Is it hard to kind of go back to some of those songs sometimes, or is it, do you see kind of where y'all have changed as a band and you have changed as an artist in that time period?
I do, and there's a couple of things that make me cringe, but not a lot compared to, you know, some of those songs were written by just this freshly 21-year-old you know, person that I kind of remember, but not really. But I'm fortunate that most of it doesn't bother me at all. Most of it was still coming from a place because of the people I had to look up to, like Mike McClure and Bob Childers, that they had this attitude of, you got to take songwriting just serious enough. I mean, there's a place for humorous songs, there's a place for sarcastic songs, but overall, still take the servicing of that song and the writing of that song and take that seriously. You know, and all things in moderation, you know, sometimes not so seriously. But I think overall, the craft, they took it serious. Like Bob used to say that all of his songs were love songs, because I'm not going to stand up there and sing about, you know, you can sing about darkness and you can sing about down places. But he's like, the light, the end of the tunnel of all my songs is love, because I don't want those people out there agreeing with me on darkness. We want to ultimately, even though the song might sound sad or it might be the blues, it has that sense of hope and sense of things are going to be all right, and we can all just come together because it's a two-way thing that's going on when a performer's playing up there. You know, you're the audience, especially in a live musical performance, is part of it whether they know it or not.
So talking about that idea, you know, you have The Light Saw Me, which was your latest radio single, did very well, especially around here. What was the mindset that you guys went into with that song as you're recording it and as you're deciding this is going to be a radio single?
That one in particular, we had so much of the entire album rehearsed going in, and because it was a concept album, we had the feel of that character going in there and wanted to be frantic and a little uncomfortable and have that in front of the beat. And then Shooter said, why don't you put the capo on 12 and play that riff again, which is, I thought, man, okay, yeah, I'm down for anything. Stuck it on there, and that became that. I mean, some people probably think that's a POG plug-in or something, one of those octave generators, but it's not. It's just a guitar capoed at 12 and a guitar played open.
Wow.
And we always just try to keep things as organic as we can and as live in the room as we can. So that song was trying to concentrate on the whole greater concept of the album, which is a transformative moment in your life.
Well, it's a fantastic one, and I look forward to anything else you have coming off the album, because the album's only been out for 5 months. Is that right at this point?
Yeah, we put it out in December, and I believe they were getting geared up. I know they released to streaming platforms Terrifying Nature and did a radio edit, so hopefully that's coming up next. If not, maybe one of the ballads, maybe like Here For You or Place to Stay. We'll see how it plays out. That kind of stuff, man, I that's where it comes back to, like, put everything on an album that you're good with. Don't throw any throwaway tracks, because somebody's going to pick what you call a throwaway track. You got to get in there and be proud of everything, and then you don't have to worry about what they do.
The days of filler are gone.
Yeah. You're picking between things that you put your heart into, and you don't know how to say it, because what am I trying to do? Like you said, at a live show, am I trying to have new fans sing along, or am I trying to turn on new fans? And that's too far past of like where I have to think about how to put a song together. So it's just, you put something that makes sense to you and that you feel good about, and go with it.
Well, Jason Bolin, we are excited to hear these songs, your new stuff and your old stuff, of course, together on Saturday. I guess one thing I always do, and curveball I'm about to throw at you, is you've done a lot of radio interviews. You've talked about your music. You've been doing this for a number of years. But what is the one question no one has ever asked you, something that you secretly love to talk about, or something that you, maybe a hidden talent you have? The floor is yours. What's something that you never get asked?
What guitar pedals are on your board?
Ooh. So, Jason Bolin, yeah. What guitar pedals are on your board?
I go through your standard Boss Tuner into a Klon Clone, a J Rocket Archer, the Archer Icon, which is gold, which has got the transistors that are supposed to be as close to the Klon Centaur as they can be. Into a Tube Screamer, into the new little MXR all phase in one that I run it on the Phase 90 with on the script setting, the old classic setting, into a Donner Golden Tremolo, which is just one of those diamonds in the rough. It's just a super cheap tremolo that doesn't suck tone, and it does a really good job. Into the TC Electronic, the little Flashback Mini Delay, has the tap tempo that you can hold the pedal down and it mutes you, and you chunk on your strings on the time of the song, and that's your delay flap, and then it goes to a Hall of Fame Mini Reverb, and I can set the overall tones of that delay and reverb that I kind of leave on all the time through an app on my phone that zaps through there, and it makes the old fax noise, and it drives sound men crazy. So, and then my acoustic, I run through an LR Bags Paradii, the old one, because the venue should have never been made and the tuner in it is unusable. So there's my guitar nerd pedal, Boss tuners on both.
Well, I
run
cannot
into a Bad Cat amp, which is basically a offshoot of Matchless.
Nice. Cannot wait to hear that all live on Saturday then.
It works most of the time.
Well, Jason Bolin, I certainly appreciate you taking time out of your afternoon, and we will see you on Saturday.
All right. Thank you very much.